Welcome to Head Games Radio. Another great show lined up for today. One of the guys that, you know, has a particular unique perspective on the game, because not only is he one of the very best, I put him up there with Joe Buck as the two best play-by-play guys in sports, period, bar none. He's got a great voice. But on top of that, Kevin Harlan from CBS is also a family of sports. He is part of a family that has been part and parcel of one of the great, if not the greatest, NFL franchise of all time, the Green Bay Packers. And we are very lucky to have a guy that has that sort of complete 360-degree perspective on sport, from the player's perspective, from management's perspective, from the media perspective. Kevin Harlan, we are so lucky to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Nick, thank you for having me. And, of course, Nick and I go back to my many years with the Kansas City Chiefs as the radio voice. And Nick was the outstanding kicker for the Chiefs and had a chance to see the team go from what was a time of rebuilding, which lasted a while, to enjoy some of the success of the Marty Schottenheimer, Carl Peterson era. But in addition to that, Nick has always been great in the community. And
Keep going. I love it.
Yeah, a lot of respect for what you've accomplished in your career and in your life. So it's great to be on with you.
Well, a KU grad, Kevin Harlan, you were getting started there. You studied journalism at KU, but then you did your work with the Chiefs, and it was wonderful to see your career develop. And I got to say also, I got to give you thanks on the air for finding my house in Kansas City. I mean, I was looking for a house, and you said, hey, try this guy, Hal Hewlin. And I lived in that house for 18 years. And for all of us, one of the things I think about with a guy like Alex Rodriguez, if you'll go with me on this, having played in New York after Kansas City, Kevin, is that having a sanctuary to escape to, having a place, a private place where you're loved, where you're safe, where you can get away from it all is really important. I had that place, thanks to you, on Windsor Drive in Fairway for 18 years. I had a golf course across from me, the famous Kansas City Country Club, where a guy named Tom Watson grew up and developed into one of the greatest golfers of all time. And I look at Alex Rodriguez, and I think of a guy that may be the most talented, one of the most talented, certainly all-round athletes in the game. And yet in New York, in the midst of that intense spotlight, it seems like even though he did have a decent series against Boston, this last five-game Boston Massacre series that we're going to talk about later in the show with Jim Beattie, it doesn't seem like he's the same person. It seems as if he doesn't have that place to escape in New York. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that's an interesting point. I think that all athletes, I think actually any businessman or businesswoman that is in the world and maybe traveling a lot, but certainly in contact with a lot of people and under a lot of stress, I think you always need some place to go, like you call a sanctuary or a haven, where you can recharge your batteries, find a comfort zone where there's nothing intrusive about going there. Whether it's a summer cottage on the water or in the mountains, or whether it's just a quiet place in your own home in suburbia, USA, I think all those things really are very, very important. You've got to have a base, I think, and it's tough for a lot of people, I think, to thrive and succeed when that isn't there, and that doesn't even touch on relationships with a friend or a spouse or a significant other, but just a place physically, a domicile, if you will, where you can go and truly relax and recharge.
We talked to Bob Rotella, who may be the most respected and well-known sports psychologist out there. We've had many of those people on the show. That's what the show is about, in addition to the usual themes on performance and leadership. We asked him about A-Rod on Friday. Here's what he had to say.
You know, I don't really know what's going on with him, other than to say that he clearly is feeling some pressure from somewhere. I don't know if it's to live up to his contract or just the people in New York having adopted him with love the way they have Jeter and some others or what, but I mean, the throw he made last week to second base where he just missed by yards.
That was closer to the first baseman.
Yeah. You know, we've seen that happen with second baseman. We've seen it happen with a lot of catchers, which seems to be a tendency sweep in the game, that was a throw that he's thinking too much. That's for darn sure.
That's Bob Rotella, who wrote the book Golf. Golf is not a game of perfect. When we come back, we're going to talk with Kevin Harlan, one of the best, if not the best, announcers in sports, the NFL, the NBA, the NCAA. We're talking a little bit about the NCAA team and the overall all-round game that is developing in sport in general. We've talked about it on this show before. And we're going to talk to our good friend Len Dawson for a second and see what he thinks and Kevin's comments on a guy named Tiger Woods. We'll be right back. That's our good friend, Charles Barkley. I'm sure that Kevin has his own Charles Barkley stories. As somebody that, shall we say, creates some atmosphere wherever he goes. We also have a good friend that Kevin and I have known for many years in Len Dawson, a guy that knows a lot about pressure. We asked him about his perspective on Tiger Woods, this phenomenon that has reawakened in the last few weeks. Well, Len Dawson, you were listening to that. You're on the golf course now. Do you feel closer to Tiger Woods or maybe Caddyshack?
I think Caddyshack is closer. Let's start with ability first with Tiger Woods. What a tremendous amount of ability he has. But, you know, golf is a unique game because you're out there by yourself. You know, in football as a quarterback, I thought my performance was going to be the end result of what everybody did on that football team offensively. You know, if I didn't have the protection, then I couldn't get the ball off. If I didn't have somebody get open and catch the ball, you know, that's another thing. So you're dependent on other people. Now, Tiger Woods is dependent on one person, and that's himself. And he gets into a mindset where that's all he's focusing on. And but he is so talented, Nick. I mean, his short game is phenomenal. He hit shots there yesterday. I was watching it on television. He had a ball in the divot, and everybody said, oh, my goodness, I don't know how he's going to play this. What did he do, stick it about 6 feet or 8 feet from the pin? And the pin was in a tough location. So, you know, but I've been into kind of zones myself when my guys were doing their job for me, and it's you're relaxed, you're comfortable, you're confident, and it seems that you see better. The things that are happening, you make better decisions. All those things happen when you're really relaxed and you have done your homework. I guess that's the thing. I mean, you have to prepare yourself.
That's Len Dawson, and you're a man that knows a lot about preparation. You've got the perspective of working with many different sports. Does this recent run by Tiger remind you of anything, or is this a whole new level of golf?
Well, Nick, it's got a feel for Jordan, I think, and when Michael was so dominant in the NBA, but because it was so singular in what he was doing. He had the nice team around him, but they knew that without him, they were nothing. And I think Len touches on some great points that for golf, it is truly a singular moment and a singular preparation. And you can have people around you, but you need to perform when you're on the green, when you're in the fairway, when you're on the tee. The thing that is so impressive to me about Tiger Woods is that, and this is a characteristic I think you find in a lot of successful people, in most successful people, and that is attention to detail. Whether you're talking about Bill Belichick, the coach of the New England Patriots, or Tiger Woods on the golf course, or whoever, I think that the people that have, look at the small picture as well as the big picture, know that the small picture adds to the big picture. The small things become big things. And the people that have attention to detail, like a Tiger Woods, always seem to find themselves with such a low downside and with incredible potential, a limitless ceiling. And that's what, to me, is most impressive about Woods.
We talked about the ability of a Tom Brady. You mentioned Bill Belichick and preparation being a big part of that. Jerry Kramer has talked about this often in the Lombardi years, the notion of preparation, the fact that you put so much pressure on yourself in practice. First of all, let me ask you from a personal standpoint. There you are in your home, perhaps. I'm not sure if you're still, I think you're in Mission now, but you're near Shawnee Mission Parkway, nice comfortable home there. And I'm not going to give the address out, I promise.
Thank you.
And, you know, you've got to prepare. You've got to prepare, and how do you visualize yourself as you're preparing for that unique place that you play as a sort of the arbiter, the guy that helps people bring them into the actual playing field or surface?
Well, the hardest thing for a broadcaster, I think, is to watch your own work, and I can't think truly of one broadcast I've ever done where I've just been completely satisfied and felt like, right, I nailed it. Now, there are times when you feel you've had a good quarter or you've called a play a certain way that had the kind of feeling, emotion, resonance that you're trying to all bring together and make it as good as possible. But I think it's a business, the broadcasting business is a business where you beat yourself up a lot. and you rarely come away satisfied. You know, in other businesses, people can kind of, you know, watch the success or failure ratio with, you know, how much money that account brings into their company, or how many cases they win in court, or how many successful heart transplants they have, or whatever. In the broadcasting business, it is so subjective. And you might put 10 people in a room, and 4 like you, and 4 don't, and 2 don't care. So knowing that is the audience you're broadcasting to, and knowing that, that self-critiquing, regardless of what you do in life, is one of the most difficult, painful, and unrewarding aspects of looking and trying to evaluate your career, you know, it's a very tough thing to kind of get a handle on. And that is what I struggle with, and I'm sure a lot of broadcasters do too. How can you regulate success? They'll tell you, well, if you get a contract, or if you get a paycheck every week, and if you get assignments every week, and if you're employed,
that's all you should care about.
That's the way you regulate it. I guess that, but to me, that's empty. I think that your success has got to be something that you can try to measure. And I think in broadcasting, that really is the only way to do it. But it rings hollow, because you know that there are some guys that are at the very top of the profession that don't do a very good job, but are there for a variety of reasons, whatever they might be. And that's the tough thing to swallow. So what you do is you stay true to yourself. You make sure that you are, you know, a great advocate of attention to detail. You continually try to better yourself. And if you look in the mirror on Sunday morning before you put on your headset and go in that NFL broadcast booth and say, I have done all I can do to get ready for this game. Now it's got to be what I can retain, how I convey it, how I work with my partner, how I work with the truck, you know, and all those things. And that, it's a very nebulous thing, and that's one of the toughest things about broadcasting.
And I think it's also about fun. We're listening to Kevin Harlan. We're talking with a guy that grew up in sports. We want to talk about that a little bit in the next segment. But let's add another comment from Peter Costas about having fun, how difficult it is under pressure. For instance, Chris DeMarco said, and I quote, I have never seen anyone who looks more comfortable leading on the back nine of a major than playing the first hole of a tournament, and that's pretty scary. It's almost like he comes into his comfort zone in that environment. And, Kevin, I remember interviewing Tiger a couple years ago at the Phoenix Open, and I said, what is the difference between that 18th hole putt that's either going to win or lose it for you and, say, a 45-yard field goal that I had to hit into the wind, you know, in the fourth quarter with 5 seconds left? And he got a little bit annoyed. He really did. And he said, you know, I don't approach that any differently than I do the first drive on the first hole. Every single stroke, every single play that I have has to have the same level of pressure, and I try to put that pressure on myself all the time.
Well, Nick, you watched yesterday. He has a sizable lead. He bogeyed
right.
17, and he's furious at himself.
And he's mad.
And he did not break a smile or show much emotion until he sank that little 2-foot putt to win it, even though he had a 5-, 6-, 7-point lead at various stages on the back nine. And that just shows you he is so focused and so determined and such a competitor that even the slightest flaw will bother him significantly. It's only in the afterglow. It's only when the final hole has been played and the final putt has been putted where you can sit back and say, you know, as I look at the landscape of what I just did and the breadth of my performance, I'm very satisfied. I've won and I'm on a great track. But when it happens, like all of us, if you miss an extra point, which you rarely did, or if you miss a field goal, which you rarely did, I mean, it would bother you, even in a game where that field goal or extra point didn't mean anything.
Didn't count.
But you were a perfectionist, and that's the I think all great performers, all great people in life have an element of that. They're slightly paranoid, but they've got that inner drive of, I've got to be perfect. Not to the point.
I'm not paranoid. It's just everybody's out to get me, Kevin. Come on now.
It's not that you're mentally unstable. I'm just saying that there needs to be that something inside that says, in my mind, in my heart, I picture what this should be like, what it should sound like, how it should be perceived. And any deviation from that, I think, really causes, you know, anxiety. And that's how Tiger was in 17 yesterday. That's how any of us are when we have a flaw or two or many in our chosen profession.
We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Kevin Harlan about life in a family, the Green Bay Packers family. Growing up with that, we'll talk a little bit more about Tiger Woods and also about Team USA. We're going to be joined by Louis Soka from Apex Performance, the former founder of the Center for Performance at West Point. We're going to talk about belief and about this notion of intense belief and confidence that only the great people like a Michael Jordan or Tiger Woods seem to have. We'll be right back.
Join Head Games Radio. Call 800-878-PLAY. That's 800-878-7529. And now, here's your host, Nick Lowry.
Kevin Harlan, CBS Sports play-by-play announcer, used to be with Fox, doing a super job, not only in football, not only in the NBA, but also the NCAA. We've got one last quote here from Bob Rutella about having fun. I want to really hammer this home because on this show, we want to have some fun too, even though these subjects sometimes can be really important for those people that want to take their lives to the next level.
And say that having fun isn't necessarily what you look like when a camera's on you. First of all, there are a lot of people who they know when the camera's on them and they look like they're having fun, but those are the only moments. And then there's a whole lot of other people. I remember spending a whole day with Ben Hogan, one-on-one talking with him, and at the end of the day it was very clear that there was a man who didn't look like he was having fun when he was playing, but when you talked to him, it was clear that he was having an absolute ball just being lost in his own little world playing golf. So, I mean, a lot of guys, you know, when you watch them on TV and they're having fun, they look like they're having fun. Other guys look very, you know, to themselves, quiet, show no emotion, and to them, that's what having fun is. So, I mean, you can't always be fooled by whether they look like you're having fun.
I've heard stories about Jack Nicklaus, Kevin Harlan, and how serious he was, and yet it's almost the quality of the artist, you know, a Michelangelo, so deeply involved. You mentioned the word paranoia. It's also just the quest to the lack of satisfaction in whatever you do. Any further comments about having fun? When you were nervous, when you've been nervous, I'm not sure you have been recently since you've had so many years in this, but and you look at some of the athletes that find that ability to have fun. Charles Barkley's a great example. He sure seems to be having fun. It's a rare commodity. What advice would you give to the listeners in terms of not taking themselves so seriously, because that's when they can't get the best out of their game?
Expected him to be a good broadcast. That's not what he trained to do. He's just being himself, and when you're just yourself with kind of a free pass to say basically anything you want, and Charles, I'm sure, would agree with this, the pressure is not to perform, because someone's always going to want him. He's Charles Barkley. The pressure was when he played that has now led to this second career. But having fun, I guess, you know, is kind of, again, that word nebulous comes up because in my instance, do I enjoy going to a Final Four and broadcasting a Final Four? Do I enjoy going to an NBA playoff game? Do I enjoy being a part of an NFL broadcast team and being part of a very special event on Sunday? Absolutely. I feel honored and blessed to be in that position. But at the same time, there is responsibility. And trying to maintain that level brings, I think, certain anxiety. And that's the thing you've got to tangle with. I think it's fun when you think about, you know, the job and where you stand and how you're perceived and all those things, and if you're successful and if you're going in the right direction. But like that paranoia word kind of comes up again. I think you're always concerned about critics, always concerned about making a mistake or not telling a story the right way or calling a play the right way from a broadcasting standpoint. But I will say this about whatever a person chooses to do, whether it's, you know, medicine or law or insurance or broadcasting or whatever. You know, the best advice I ever heard was from my dad. And he said, you know, there's nothing like waking up every morning and going to a job that you love and you would almost do for free. Because if you find, like when I talk to college kids, or even just talk to my own kids, I'll say, you know, start the whole process by finding something that really gets you going, that in your heart you'd love to do, whatever it might be. Because then when you pursue it, you'll put more time and more effort into that to get better at it. And if you get better at it, you'll advance further. And when you advance further, then the money will come and you'll have the kind of successful, you know, financial security and all those things that I think most people
those
probably
are the byproducts.
Would. Yeah, exactly, that they want to achieve. But think of the person that wakes up every morning and goes to a job that they despise, works for a person that they can't stand. What effort are they going to put in that job? Very little. I mean, it may be on cruise control, and they could put anybody in there, and they do the same thing, and the guy will collect his paycheck and go home and carry that misery from his job to his home life. Mm-hmm. So my feeling is, you know, when I got in broadcasting, I love the aspect of being around sports, and at that time I loved the aspect of being able to travel, which I can't stand now because it's a byproduct of my job, but I love that. And I still wake up on game day, and I still wake up and say I feel very fortunate to have this job, and I'm looking forward to this game tonight. But you know, like in all things in life, it's like that balance, because when you're first getting out in life, you know, everything is about you, and what you want to do, and what kind of schedule are you on, and when you maybe meet someone that you want to share your life with, things change dramatically, and hopefully for the better, which for me, obviously, it was, is that now you can't think of just yourself, and when you're going to eat, and where you're going to live, and where you're going to travel, and what you're going to do, you now think of this other person just as much, and probably more. If it's a healthy relationship, you probably think of the other person more than yourself. Now you had kids do it, and a mortgage, and school, and college, and everything else. Well, now that balance becomes a heck of a lot different, and it's really weighted down by all these other concerns. And
Kevin, let's talk about your father. You just mentioned him as the influence and loving what he did. Let's talk about that insight that you bring to your broadcast in the NFL and all sports, because your father loved what he did, and obviously the perspective of a community-owned team. Green Bay Packers are different from other NFL teams. I mean, they are owned by the community. Tell me about that, growing up in that family, and how that affected you, because it certainly means you have a comfort level with what you do that comes through in your broadcasts.
Yeah, when I was growing up, I was a ball boy for the Packers. My dad began as an assistant general manager and worked his way through the organization and was there for 18 years before he was finally elected president, which he's held since 1989, and he's retiring this year. This will be his final year. The bylaws of the Packers say that the president must retire at age 70, and he turns 70 in September. And then he'll run through May, and then he'll be finished. He'll become chairman emeritus. But, you know, he was so good with us and letting us go to practices and obviously taking us to games. We would work in the press box and work on the sideline, and so we had an incredibly unique perspective on players, on coaches, on front offices, on the press box and what the press does and how they cover and all the things that are involved with professional football. And so I can't think of a better way to grow up than in that kind of environment for what I've chosen as my profession. And so I look back on those days all the time. And you mentioned I'm doing the Packer preseason games on television with Rich Gannon, the ex-Raider quarterback, NFL MVP, and a terrific...
And an ex-Chiefs quarterback.
And an ex-Chiefs quarterback, exactly. And I'm doing games at Lambeau Field. Well, when I was a ball boy, I used to sneak away at lunch and climb up the stairs on the steps of Lambeau Field, sneak in the press box, go in a broadcast booth, shut the door, and recreate games just, you know, in my mind. I'd look at the field and pretend the Packers were playing the Vikings, for instance, and I knew all the players from both sides, and I'd recreate this game talking out loud, knowing no one could hear me. But that I used to go up there and practice, and now here I am, you know, 30 years later, and with the ability to actually broadcast live, you know. So it's humbling to think about, you know, that whole situation, how lucky I was to grow up in that kind of atmosphere, but knowing that that was the thing that fueled my interest to this day.
Kevin, did you feel for Luke Donald, who seemed so calm as you watched him on that first tee? He had a great first drive, and he couldn't, it seems, and we've talked with Gary McCord on this, who's on the show on a regular basis as well, it just seems like it's not enough to be there in the final group with Tiger, because the players that play with him aren't ready for 15, 20,000 people there the whole time. They aren't ready for not only his level of play, but the level of attention that comes with it.
Well, I think, you know, you've touched on it. They're not ready. Mentally, they're not ready. Physically, they can hit a shot probably as well as Woods, but mentally, can they have that focus and that concentration and that wherewithal to, you know, absorb all the pressure? You know, that Tiger, he's wired a different way. He thrives on that. Other guys are not used to that. And I really do believe that mentally sometimes he just wears people down. He's like a machine. And that toughness, that mental toughness, is something that is so unique. And that's why we haven't seen many Tiger Woods or Jack Nicklaus's or Michael Jordan's. You know, the will that they show mentally. You know, physically, there's probably more similarity than any of us realize with these athletes, pro football, NBA basketball, whatever. It's what's that extra thing that makes you stand above the rest? Well, I think it is. I think they're just wired differently. And Tiger certainly, I think, fits that.
Well, we're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to have some thoughts on something that Kevin Harlan knows a lot about, which is basketball, whether it's the NCAA, whether it is the NBA. And in this case, we're going to talk about some of the comments from Rick Bucher from ESPN Magazine about the Team USA performances and what's coming up and what he thinks are the chances for this new team. It's no longer a dream team, but it certainly has a lot more to it than more recent U.S. teams have had. We'll be right back with Kevin Harlan and Louis Soka in just a second. Welcome back to Head Games Radio with our special guest, Kevin Harlan. We want to thank Louis Soka, who's going to come back to talk a little bit with Jim Beattie towards the end of the show about that Boston massacre. But we got a quote from Rick Bucher, who is another Dartmouth guy, I might say, about this Team USA and what they are confronting this week as they begin to play some better teams.
Well, let's talk about three key things that you talked about on ESPN over the weekend. Number one, Spain and Argentina have athletic big men. Number two, they have guards that can handle pressure, the kind of pressure that we're going to try to put on them every game. And number three, maybe the most important, is the synchronicity, the word you use. The fact that these teams know each other so much better. It's really more like an NBA team that's played together for 2-3 years.
That's exactly right. I'm longer than that. This is like guys who played AAU ball together, then went to college, and then went to the pros, because that's how long a lot of these players, Argentina, you know, their top 5-6 guys have been playing together since they were 15 years old and playing a game that is different from the NBA. And I'll piggyback off of something that Vinny said that is overlooked, because we look at LeBron James as the leader of his young Cleveland team. We look at Dwayne Wade as the emerging leader with the Miami Heat. Carmelo Anthony, emerging star with the Denver Nuggets. Two elements here. One, they're still only 24, 25 years old, and they're playing a game that is unfamiliar to them. They do not have that at a disadvantage when they're going up against the Manu Ginobili's and even the Boris Diaz, the guys that we don't consider leaders necessarily in the NBA. But they are leaders with their international game, international teams, and they have a huge advantage. The other part in the comparison to the 92 Dream Team is when we had our guys there and they were going to the Olympics, they had all already established their credentials. They didn't have to go.
They had nothing to prove.
They had nothing to prove individually. It was only a matter of collectively, we need to prove that we're the best. Do you think LeBron James going to these is looking at it categorically and saying, doesn't matter what kind of numbers I put up, we just need to win a gold? I don't think so. Do you think Carmelo Anthony is approaching it that way after all the trouble he had last year? I don't think so.
That is our good friend Rick Bucher. He's a regular contributor to this show and one of the more thoughtful people on the NBA beat. And speaking of thoughtful people, Kevin Harlan, as you listen to this, David Stern was on the show 2 weeks ago and said this is not a dream team. I put that to a special time and a special place. This is a team that is organized by Jerry Colangelo, that's run by Krzyzewski, that has a true commitment with young players that are still hungry to prove themselves. So the one thing I would say that isn't probably a benefit in some ways is even though they aren't like Charles Barkley and Michael Jordan and Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, they do still have something to prove. That also means that they're hungry. That also means that if it's harnessed properly, maybe this Team USA, maybe not this year, but 2 years from now, when it really counts in the Olympics, they'll be ready.
I think they also like Nick being the solution because there was this thing was in disarray after Athens in 04, and there was no rudder. And Jerry Colangelo and a committee of many good basketball minds, Doug Collins among them, got together and tried to formulate a way that this thing should be run. So they had tryouts, and they said, we're going to dip into the college pool again if there's someone that warrants that kind of promotion, and certainly the NBA. But we're going to pick players not just by virtue of their salaries or how good they are, but who fit a certain style, the international style, which is different than the NBA. And the rest of the world is catching up, so we've got to be very, very careful how we do this. And they did. It was a very thoughtful process of who's on that team, who certainly is coaching that team. And I think the results will show the longer this group is together. And I think there's a great deal of pride among these players, too. You can only make so much money, and they've all are millionaires many times over. So now they have a chance to be a part of something very unique with the next wave of greatness in the NBA, Carmelo and LeBron and and Dwayne Wade and all these.
That's
young
a nice
players.
Threesome.
Oh, absolutely. You're getting the torch. They're getting the torch passed to them from the Kevin Garnetts and people like that. And so here we go. And I think it's going to be a very good ride. I'm very excited about this team and what they've shown. Certainly about Krzyzewski as their coach, but probably more importantly, just the way they've all entered this thing, knowing it was a process. They had to make the team. They got to stay committed to the team. And the bottom line is, it is a team. And I think before it was just a collection of bodies, and that's what their undoing was in Athens.
Well, Kevin, before we let you go, we first of all want to thank you so much for how thoughtful you've been today on the show. Speaking of basketball and your perspective, it seems as if the world game is becoming more of an all-round game. We watched it closely with Mike D'Antoni, who's been on the show a lot, and the influx of maybe 100 different European players. We talked about the differences with Rick Bucher yesterday, and the fact that the big man's role is very different in this world game. He has to keep moving. But let's talk about Dwayne Wade and the comeback in the NBA championships from your perspective, because I, for one, thought it was over. And I, for one, thought that this team, Miami and Pat Riley, were being outcoached, were out-motivated, if you will. And to me, that is an example of what we strive for in sports, that even when those players, and even in a more difficult sense, those teams are counted out, they find a way. They find a way to come back. As you look back at this NBA season and the wonderful conclusion that it brought, not to mention, of course, the fact that I think the game itself is renewed with a whole generation of players that people actually like. Tell me about that comeback that Dwayne Wade brought about with Miami.
Well, I think they were motivated by Shaq, and I think that in Pat Riley, you've got one of the great motivators, and he seized all the different things that were against him as they were down early in that series. And that's a tough tandem to work at. I think Shaq probably realizes that there may not be too many more championships, and he fancies himself as a guy that will be thought of as the second-best center of all time, either back of Wilt or Russell, or certainly to what those would be the top three names you think of when you think of NBA centers, professional basketball centers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of that drives that team. Plus, Wade is like an evolving player. It seems like he does something different every year, every month, every game. And, you know, his greatness wasn't seen in Marquette, although he was a very high pick by Miami, number five overall. And I think they realized they were getting a good player, certainly a unique guy, but I don't think anybody foresaw what he's done now. So all these things are kind of coming together. Plus, you had a team of very prideful players, Gary Payton on that team, Antoine Walker on that team, guys that had been close in the past, maybe had not won, but certainly knew that, you know, they're on the clock. And that's an old team, too, is Miami. I just think a lot of these things kind of came together, And I don't want to say Avery Johnson was out coach, because I always hate to say that about any coach, but I will say that I think Pat Riley engineered, when we look back at this, you know, truly one of the great comebacks in the history of the NBA Finals, how he got that team resuscitated and on and a championship trophy in their hands at the end of the day. And I think that's going to go down historically as one of the great comebacks.
Well, they were dead, and they came back to life, and you certainly brought a lot of life to the show today, my friend, and we appreciate it so much, and hopefully maybe in a month or so or 6 weeks, we'd love to have you back on and give your comments about the NFL season as well.
Great, Nick. Always great to hear you, and I'm glad you're doing so well, and thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Kevin. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.